Hello, I'm Mark Peterson, and this is the Stronger Philanthropy Podcast. We're in season two of the podcast, and this is episode 8. This is where we love giving well. This is the second part of an interview I did with Greg Pennoyer, our guest from the previous episode. If you didn't hear it, it's worth going back to episode 7 to catch the opening of our conversation together. As mentioned last episode, Greg has been involved in major donor philanthropy for over 2 decades, both as a fundraiser and lately also as a facilitator for the development of the Roundtable, a Canadian membership organization for philanthropists involved in faith-based giving. In this episode, we highlight his current work at Cardis, a Hamilton-based think tank, which recently sponsored the launch of Faith in Canada 150, and its several public programs which celebrate that faith, religion, and spirituality is as Canadian as maple syrup. As we reflect back on our 150-year history as a nation, we're impoverished if we don't recall how faith weaves its way through our story. Greg gives us a lot to chew on as we consider what is philanthropy and grapple with its power and potential. Let's move over to part 2 of our conversation now. Let's maybe talk a bit about gaps in people's philanthropy, in especially relating to people of faith. Do we have blind spots in our giving? You've actually alluded to the idea of culture shaping in the arts as perhaps being one of the blind spots that we have. Is there more?
I don't think we see the power of our philanthropy yet.
Right.
So many institutions, mainstream secular institutions that are engaged in philanthropy, they spend a lot of time and effort on research, on reflection, on going into places and researching problems in particular parts of the world and finding solutions through much longer processes of study and reflection. I'm not saying that we should do it at that extent, but philanthropy is a very powerful thing. Where we give, how we give, what organizations we choose to give to and not give to, each one of these decisions has such an impact on the charitable sector, which is, you know, the fourth largest sector in Canada. But the charitable sector wields more economic wealth than the retail industry does in Canada. So it's significant. And I think if we recognize the power of philanthropy, we would take more time to reflect on and be more strategic and maybe even more innovative in our giving. So I think the blind spots are really related to strategic giving, through innovation, to sustainable solutions, and taking the time necessary to discover what those are. It is true that I think many of those who are generous people and philanthropists will spend a great deal of money in their on the improvement of their vocation, of their work, of their roles as CEOs or CFOs or owners of businesses.
Do you mean like a professional development?
A professional development. Yeah, thank you for that. They, much less resource and time is spent, if any, is spent in the development of their philanthropy.
Right.
And I think that is the primary blind spot.
Like investing in one's own kind of maturation.
Right.
In giving philanthropically and what that means.
Yeah. Yes. And that is, to me, is the biggest blind spot. Yes, we give a lot to triage kinds of things where we meet immediate needs, and that's very important. And yes, we need to give more to those culture-shaping institutions and to the arts. But I don't think we'll really understand even the value of that unless the philanthropic community begins to invest in its own understanding of what it does, as of what they do as philanthropists, and the power of philanthropy and the possibility of philanthropy and And I know, for example, many people hate that word and said, Greg, why do you use the word philanthropy? Well, that's what it is. Philanthropy means love of humanity. So that even alone, the use of the word is a good thing to be educated on, because it means that this what we're doing here is showing love to our brothers and sisters in this human family.
Mm-hmm. One way that you've been doing that has been kind of your going concern for the past couple of years while you've worked at Cartus is this Faith in Canada 150 project.
Mm.
And it's a very creative endeavor that you've undertaken. Just share a little bit about that initiative, how you see it as being something that could potentially shape culture.
As I mentioned earlier, we kind of live in a culture of amnesia. And I think we're forgetting a few things that have shaped who we are as a society and as a civilization. And if we forget them, we'll live off the fumes of this culture for a while, but then we may very well lose it. Mm-hmm. So Michael Van Pelt, the CEO of Cartus, in 2014, was looking ahead to 2017, our 150th anniversary. It was wondering if religion and faith and its contribution to who we are as a society would be remembered in this celebration. And after a little bit of study and work, he found that the vast number of organizations that were formally coming together to plan and explore and develop initiatives for the celebration of our 150th anniversary, not the vast majority of them, none of them were concerned about the place of religion in our common life. So he thought, wouldn't it be interesting if Cartus picked up this mantle and brought and developed a program, which is now called Faith in Canada 150, that would celebrate, remind a forgetful culture, the place of religion in our life together. You can't tell the story of Montreal and not tell the story of the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. You can't tell the story of Surrey and not tell the story of the Sikhs. You can't tell the story of the settling of the West and not tell the story of the Ukrainian Orthodox, or the story of Toronto without telling the story of the Presbyterians. Mm-hmm. Religion has shaped who we are, and it continues to shape who we are. Look at the immigration. Mm-hmm. You know, the revival of the Catholic churches in Canada in terms of numbers is in part due to the immigration from the Philippines of devout Catholic people coming in and filling the churches and people from India and the Middle East and, you know, the Muslims and the Sikhs and the Ismailis and the Ahmadians and the Jewish people that are coming to this country, who all have devout commitments to their faith. Mm-hmm. You cannot separate who they are from the source of their beliefs. Mm. And so we thought, wouldn't it be great to bring all these people together and say with one voice that religion is important to our common life, and we cannot deny it. And we haven't done this in the kind of syncretistic way that many multi-faith initiatives do, where they say all faiths are equal and no one faith is more true than the other. Speak to an imam and he's going to say, sorry, that's not true. I believe that the Islamic faith is the true faith. Talk to a Catholic priest and he will say, no, the Christian faith is the true faith. The incarnation of Jesus Christ came for the healing of all human beings, including Muslims, Jews, and Sikhs. So each of us, the Orthodox Jew, the devout Sikh, we each believe that our faith is the true faith. And so we have differences, but the common ground on which we stand of believing in the transcendent and the importance of religion and the shaping of virtue and of a society, this is the ground on which we can stand together and say, despite our differences, and in fact, not only in spite of them, but in regard for those differences, in respect for those differences, we can speak together about the importance of religion in our common life. And it's been an amazing experience. This year, the events that we held in Ottawa during Canada Day, the millennial 75 young millennials that came together from all faiths, each feeling respected and regarded, but each seeing the common ground on which they could stand next door to a person of a different faith and together say that religion is important in our common life. And then the gala that we had and the celebrations that we had, it was an amazing expression of living together in difference.
Yeah.
And there's many other things still happening. The Mitchell Prize, we're celebrating literature, poetry, and short stories on faith in our common life coming up at the Aga Khan Museum in October.
And that's a prize that a philanthropist is offering for great literature, is that right?
Yeah, a Christian philanthropist, Davis Mitchell, in honor of her and her late husband's giving over the years, have funded this prize for the next three prizes, and it's a prize given to the best short story and the best chapbook of poetry, a chapbook being 8 to 12 poems, all related to faith in our life together. And we've had submissions from people from all faiths, and the deadline was in June, and now it's going through a judging process, and we have some of Canada's leading poets and short story writers that are the judges for this. So it's been an exceptional experience so far, and on October 30th we'll be announcing the prize at the Aga Khan Museum in Toronto.
Great.
I have to say, though, if it's okay for me to say this, that one of the greatest challenges has been to convince the Christian community and the Christian philanthropic community of the value of this. We have been the most afraid. And that by doing this, we would water down our faith. I think exactly the opposite has happened. That we have found a way to serve the world, to serve a broader community than just the Christian faith, to protect their rights by fulfilling our Lord's understanding of hospitality, of friendship, of care for the world. I think, you know, isn't it interesting that the parable that unveils for us what it means to love our neighbor, he chose someone outside of his faith, a Samaritan, the Good Samaritan, to demonstrate, to make a point about what it means to love your neighbor. I mean, that to me is affirms for us the fact that we don't need to be afraid as we engage people of all faiths in this common effort to preserve the religious element of our society. We don't have to be afraid that we're going to diminish our faith. In fact, we fulfill the Christian faith as we care for people of all other faiths and ensure their freedom, affirm their right to be present in the public square, their faith intact. But Faith in Canada 150 has been a whole lot of things. We created a faith alliance with about 300 plus now organizations representing Christian organizations, devout Christian organizations, even evangelical Christian organizations, and Muslim and Jewish and Sikh organizations that have all come together and say, we don't deny that we have our differences, but we do affirm that we have a common commitment to the importance of religion in our life together. It's been great.
This has been delightful, but I want to end with just you helping us understand the availability of the books that you've edited. Tell us about those and about the good news that you have about a new one. Is that public?
Yeah, well, it is now. I think as most everybody who knows me knows, I've published two books, of which I only wrote 500 words in each book.
They must be short books then.
They are very short books. Though. One, can I just briefly tell the story of how it all got started?
Absolutely.
Be too long. Yeah. But, in 1998, I was on my own at Christmas living in Ottawa, about to move to Vancouver to work for a major charity there, moving from the Center for Cultural Renewal, which I'd helped start with Ian Benson, and moving on to other things. And so I found myself in Ottawa on Christmas by myself. And so I decided to go to St. Benedict's, which I believe is a high Anglican church in, is it St. Benedict's? Oh, now I forget the name of it. I think it's St. Benedict's, and high Anglican church in Ottawa. And I walked into the service. They had had an early service, and so this was the beginning of the second service. And at eye level, there was this hue, this smoke that had just been captured in this 3-inch wide or high ribbon across the entire church. I was captured by that. Where did it come
from? Incense?
I guess from incense. At the time, having never been to a high Anglican or high...
That was before you were into the smells and bells,
I guess. This was way before the smells and bells. So I walked into this service and captured by this image, and then watched the service unfold with all the pomp and the circumstance and the incense. And as the procession was made for the reading of the gospel into the middle of the entire congregation. Now, for many who may be hearing this, they'll say, well, duh, Greg. But at the time, this was absolutely brand new for me. The procession in the middle, and then the lifting up of the gospels and reading it, it just dawned on me. This is the word among us. This is what this means, this procession. And I was, that began for me an exploration to the physicality of our faith. Mm-hmm. That the incense, that the sound, the bells, the processions, each had meaning behind them to help us physical human beings capture the mystery of our faith and capture the essence of our faith. Mm-hmm. And it began me on a launch into the study of the incarnation. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting? That lasted for a couple years.
The incarnation meaning Christ's physical presence.
Yes.
As a human being on earth.
That his coming to earth was not only an affirmation of divine presence in the world, but that even the ordinary world, the world has a divine nature to it, that the physical part of our life is really, really important. So I began to study and went to Regent College every Friday and during the course of my years there. And out of that came a book that captures through history on the feast days and the captures through Christian calendar, through history, through image, because there's lots of works of art, and through reflections and prayers, probably the most important season of the Christian calendar, which is the one on the incarnation, which is Advent and Christmas. So God With Us was published in 2007. It is a daily devotional that goes through all of Advent and through the entire Christmas season, not just Christmas Day and Boxing Day, but Christmas Day right through January 6th and the revelation of our Lord to the world. We had Father Richard John Newhouse, Kathleen Norris, Lucy Shaw, the great Orthodox Scott Cairns, and others who participated and contributed to this. And it was a very successful, though we still get emails today from people I don't know saying, you know, at Christmas time or Advent, how much the book means. So delightful. But I take very little credit for this. It really was the contributions of these extraordinary writers and these extraordinary painters, these great works of art that we drew from. And then, I can't remember the year. I think it was 2012. We then published the book on the next great season, which is Lent. And that has done well as well. And now we're thinking of the final season, which is Pentecost. And we hope that in 2 years we'll have launched and published that as well, this exploration of God in us. The Lent book is called God for Us, that with the theme that God, that Lent is not simply discipline and suffering for suffering's sake. It actually is a revelation that God is for us. And then this final book, that God is in us. So that will be the completion of the Trinity.
As you were speaking today, I was just thinking, wow, I think Greg is like a spiritual midwife of some kind. You know, you're attending the birth of things. And it's so interesting to see how you've attended the birth of so many interesting endeavors that are shaping culture, are impacting people's perspectives on how to live and be in our world. And I'm grateful so much for our friendship. So thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, well, this I'm grateful too for our friendship, and thank you for those kind words. I'm a facilitator of other people's great ideas, and I'm happy to be working with such great people as I have. And you've been one of those, and I'm happy to be a part of this podcast.
I'm grateful for the two episodes we've had with Greg and pleased with how he has given us much to consider about philanthropy as being that which expresses love for humanity. Thank you, Greg, for your leadership role of birthing new thoughts in us and helping our faith community grow into a fuller understanding and experience of our own humanity. I hope you were intrigued by the books Greg mentioned. In the show notes, you'll find links to his two books of art and essays called God With Us and God For Us. As Christmas approaches, God With Us is a great gift for your loved ones. And at Easter, God For Us is a great selection. If you haven't got your copy yet, I encourage you to order these. In other news, I need your help. If you know of someone who should be interviewed for this podcast, I'd like you to reach out to me and make the suggestion or help me connect to that person. It might even be you. Please send me your ideas at strongerphilanthropy@gmail.com. Before you go, please take a moment to subscribe to this podcast. We're on iTunes and other apps. Also, if you haven't read it yet, my book, Love Giving Well, Philanthropy as Pilgrimage, is available on my website at strongerphilanthropy.ca/book. Thanks for joining us in our quest to love giving well. Buen camino.